two men collide. Rival nations. It's a primitive clash, venting years of frustration. Guess what I'm trying to say is that if they can change, then you can change, and we can all change. It's time for Flats and Shanks.
You close enough?
Yeah, perfect.
You can blink if you want, mate.
Weirdo.
Just checking.
Get a bit weird now, mate.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to this live podcast, Fuller's Guinness Flats and Shanks. Make some noise.
He's so David Brent, isn't he? He's so Brent.
In the Three Guineas pub here in Reading. I love Fuller's. I love London Pride. I love Guinness. I drink it incredibly responsibly. Legally, we have to say that. Flats, how are you, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, good?
Yep.
Good.
I'm fine. It's you I'm worried about, mate.
It's your sisters you should worry about, mate.
Oh, fucking hell. Anyway, we've got a special guest. Can you guess who it is? Ladies and gents, James Haskell.
I mean, look, we've got to say his full name, James Andrew Welburn Haskell.
Yep. Welburn?
Welburn.
Yeah.
What's that?
I think it's kind of a chintzy middle class attempt at kind of be double barreled, I think. I don't think it means anything. It's like I've got mock Tudor cladding at the front of the house and
have they, yeah.
Princess Diana miniatures in the everything Scotch guarded.
So it's not significant, it's not a family name. Really.
Well, I mean, apparently it is. I think it's just been bolted on.
It's like Shanks' parents called him Tomos, but spelt T-O-M-O-S the Welsh way, even though he's from Surrey. Embarrassing.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, the Lions spelt it wrong when I got my cap delivered.
Have you had... Is this what this is going to be about? Absolute rugby gnaws off, is it? Because I've never listened. So
what? Thank you.
We're actually glad you turned up because you've had a couple of big days, haven't you?
I have. You guys think we're talking about the royal wedding. I'm not. I'm talking about the team social yesterday.
Yeah, how was that?
It's any wonder I'm here. I'm battered, honestly.
The best part about getting knocked out before the final is that you get an extra week's holiday and you get to be on the piss when other lads are still doing tackling and breakdowns. So you can go on the source. Where'd you go?
Somewhere, it was like Clapham area. It was a bit of a blur, to be honest with you. I was dressed as... you can't swear, can we?
Yeah, you can, yeah.
Okay, fine.
We'll just beep it out.
You had to have kind of famous pairings, and I wanted to go as Captain Hook and Paul Doran Jones goes Smee. But we couldn't get the costumes delivered in time. So we ended up...
Because you didn't look till Thursday.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I didn't know that we were getting knocked out tonight. I wasn't prepared. So...
I heard some of the lads had holidays booked for this Wednesday. Anyway, cool.
So Paul and I came as a turd and he came with some toilet paper. A great pairing. Honestly, we looked very good.
How'd you dress as a turd?
It was actually just a full kind of climbing turd costume with a fold-up hood with actual sweet corn detailing.
Genuine. Pukachur.
Genuine. And the weird thing was that halfway through kind of the day, we walked into some pub in... West London or wherever it was, and everybody stopped and just stared at me walking as a turd. And I was like, right, this is very incognito.
Could you see your face on it?
You could, yeah. Mm. Yeah, it's not ideal.
Blended right in.
Yeah, I know. I had to go to the toilet and just get into civvies.
Just to clarify, though, you are injured, aren't you?
I am 100%
yes,
injured, yes.
You are injured.
Before we talk about that, still on the team social, are team socials like now what they were like years ago, which is sort of your silly Sunday, obviously not Mad Monday because you're here, Twats Tuesday because you're here, but silly Sunday, is it everyone going out and getting responsibly smashed and letting themselves down
on a boat, grown
pro athletes spewing in front of children at Sunday lunch?
No, obviously we're very responsible. You have pint, shot, pint, water, pint. Water, sick. No, I think it is... It is kind of the last bit of sort of amateur thing going on. You know, we go all sort of season without drinking and then kind of have that good day in the sun, all the boys together, everyone's in fancy dress. There's nothing better than kind of 30 lads making incredible effort. As I did say, my turd and paper costume was incredible.
It was really good.
It was really good, but lots of boys dressed up, brilliantly. And I think just going out and spending a bit of time is great. But you have to be very aware now that everybody is their own paparazzi. Everybody can photograph. So you still got to be on best behaviour. So we actually have security with us.
Did you?
Yeah, yeah.
We had Danny Grucock. No one fucked around with us, mate.
Yeah, black belt and karate.
Not a problem. Just chinning civvies in pubs.
But we just can't have that now because it's too dangerous. Everyone's looking to stitch you up. You know, so we got these guys, these two ex-police guys were monitoring.
Or everyone's looking to stitch you up, or there might be a photograph of you just behaving like you normally do at the end of the season, and that would in turn stitch you up because it's you that's stitching yourself up by
100%.
Being... Yeah. No, I get it completely. But you have security guards with you. Were there people trying to take photos of you on their smartphones? Because it is these new, modern, newfangled phones and social media. People say the game's changed. It has, and it'll keep changing. That's fine. People think it's all money. It's not. Social media's made a massive difference to the social habits of rugby players, isn't it?
You probably had a GoPro on, didn't you?
Of course, yeah.
But you can release it yourself then, though, can't
yeah,
you?
Yeah, you can. Yeah. Maximise it, get the revenue from YouTube.
It's on your terms, isn't it?
Always business, your way. Oh, well, highlight package on your with terms, transitions, right. Music.
Of all the lads, you haven't got to throw anyone under the bus here, but are there one or two lads who are particularly good value on a day out like that?
Yeah, there's a few guys that are obviously fantastic. As you know, that I mean, there's probably people in this room here who have a few beers and turn into an alter ego.
Yeah.
And if you're looking around and you can't see who I'm talking about, then it's probably you. you know, we've got a few people. We had an ex-player at WASS that turned into a bloke called Hank. Hank was the terror. We had a Frank the Tank as well.
I remember Hank. I met Hank in the picture and piano in Fulham.
Yeah.
And he was a proper handful.
Wait, disgrace.
Absolute handful.
Frank the Tank, he was unbelievable when he turned out. And when he's 6 foot, I won't say who it was, but this guy was 6'5", Frank the Tank. And when he went mad, I'll never forget him standing there and he just went, I'm not sure I can say this, but who cares?
Who cares?
He just went, I'm just going to wee myself. And he just, and I'm like, what? He goes, I'm going to wee myself. And he just weed himself.
Awesome,
in the middle,
bro.
Yeah. I'm like, wow.
Nice one.
That seemed like a good idea at the time. So... But no, it's kind of quite responsible, and you do have to be careful. There are some boys that are very good value, and I just think it's nice to have a bit of a bond, you know, through a tough season where, you know, a lot of people associate rugby with what they've seen of university teams doing those mad kind of initiations, and everyone still thinks there's a huge drinking culture, and there isn't.
There isn't.
You know, it's every week, it's finish the game, probably don't even see the opposition, 5 minutes, ice bath, protein shake, boom, on the bus, you know, one day off, back in the mix. So it is actually nice to have a good kind of bonding session where you're quite relaxed, sun was out, it was good.
Lovely stuff, lovely stuff.
Just prior to that, you were quite busy on Saturday.
Mm.
Well done for the invite.
Are you as annoyed as I am that you didn't go to the WASS semi-final? Can you believe that? It's outrageous, isn't it? Injured, why didn't you go and watch?
He's leaving anyway, it doesn't matter, does it? But what we want, like, how were you invited? Was it pigeon? Was it through the mail, Royal Mail? Was it email? Was it phone call?
Teletext. It was like it's like Harry Potter. An owl delivered it.
Yeah,
and the envelope opened and read itself. It was amazing.
And then disappeared.
Oh yeah, yeah. I said, I'm finally going to Hogwarts, Chloe. She's like, no, it's actually the royal wedding. But never mind.
Did you get invited, or did Chloe get invited? Who was the plus one?
Well, I've actually, the lads took great delight in telling me that it was Chloe Maylian's partner had attended the wedding. But and I don't want to sound really wanky, but I'm going to, but it was James Haskell plus one.
Of course it was. I was busy anyway, don't worry.
Yeah, but
about
what,
it.
Was it an invite through the post?
Yeah, it came in the post, obviously.
Is it really swanky?
Yeah, it was very nice, I've kept it.
Did they have like a John Lewis catalogue for wedding gifts and stuff?
Yeah.
Did you get him a toaster?
Harrods. There was a Harrods catalogue. No. I think it was just donations.
It won't be Harrods, that's for sure.
Oh. I've inadvertently put my foot in it there. And we'll probably have to edit that bit out, actually.
Did you say Halfords?
Yeah, Halfords.
He said Halfords. That's right.
The Halfords catalogue. Yeah. Yeah. Excellent.
Yeah.
Could I press pause for a sec? Not on the recording. Am I the only person in the room who doesn't know what that gag means?
Oh. Genuine.
Yeah.
Who owns Halford?
Hey? Who owns Harrods?
Tony.
Oh, Kate, yep.
You got it. Well done.
That's why this bit's never, ever getting ahead.
Yeah. So how did you approach that then with director rugby, Di Young, that you might be missing the WASPs semi-final?
Well, I didn't. I kind of said that I was unable to attend because obviously I thought I'd be playing in the kind of semi-final and I came
unable off to attend the wedding. Yeah.
Yes.
Hang on. Okay. How do you tell Hazza that you're not coming to the wedding as things stand? Like, do you have to reply to some member of the special forces or?
Yeah, you got. There's a few.
Or do you text Harry?
Listen, anything I say is going to sound really like,
no,
so
it's not.
It is. It is. When you listen to this back, you're like, oh, what a loser.
I've got David. I can text. I'm on texting terms with David Beckham, so you're not going to beat that. So go for it. It's not true, anyway.
Well, he's so dreamy, isn't he? Did you see him at the Royal Wedding?
Yeah,
so
good looking. I mean, it's a.
Is any man who can turn up to Royal Wedding with like full neck tattoos and just look unbelievable?
And he gave Elton John a kiss on the lips as well.
Did he?
Yep.
Good.
What a boy.
Yep.
I like that.
What a boy.
If I ever meet him, he's getting a kiss that's on the lips of me, yeah. I'll tell you that.
I'd let Elton John, Elton John kiss me on the lips and Beckham.
Beckham, 100%.
So you replied to say that you possibly couldn't make it.
Yeah, yeah. I said, listen, there's obviously, depending on whether what, because it was obviously done a while ago. I said, listen, I'm not sure what's going to make the semis, what the story is.
Yeah.
I don't think I'll be able to go. Obviously, my priority is that. And then we played against Newcastle, and I came off 10 minutes after half time. With my foot just killing me, and
yeah, it was.
I had a scan. I had a scan in the week.
Who were you winking at? Did you have something in your eye?
Yeah, I did. Yeah, I'm off. And I had a scan. Obviously, it showed like swelling and inflammation. And I tried to train, and I couldn't do it. And basically, as we got into the Tuesday of the week, when he was picking the team, he just took me to one side and said, "Listen, I spoke to the physio, seen the scan. You're not going to be right. Everything's okay." And I never really had the conversation because I was intending to go to the game. And then Di messaged me saying, "Listen, if you want to go to this wedding, I'll give you 100% support. It's a once in a lifetime. You got my permission." So I said, okay, I'll message back and see if they've got the spot still available. It was, so that was it.
So we'll ask what the wedding was like in a minute, but then what, because it's the most, that's the reason we're here. But
what we will do as well, we'll do probably half hour, 45 minutes now. We'll have a quick break so you can go to the toilet, and then we'll open up for some questions after.
Wash your hands, all right?
So, yeah.
But what... I want to, the semi-final thing, if you're injured for a semi-final, like there are some teams that take the whole squad and that sort of stuff, but I played in semi-finals, then was injured for other semi-finals, and I went to the final because we all had to go, but the semi-finals I was injured quite a lot, I never went to watch them. I couldn't think of anything worse than going to watch them. In fact, one of the semi-finals, a Heineken Cup semi-final that I missed with Achilles injury, I didn't even watch it on telly. I couldn't have anything worse. Not that it was like so super painful I couldn't bear to watch it. It was like, I'm not involved. It's a massive occasion. They're miles away from where I live. I'm going to have a nice day and not base my day around this. And it doesn't mean I didn't love my club. So it's like you not going to a semi-final because you're injured, to me, is completely reasonable. And I'm not just saying that because you're here. I mean, if you weren't here, I'd be stabbing you right in the back.
And presumably Windsor Castle has good Wi-Fi and you've got the BT app, so...
Sadly, not allowed to use your phone. So I had to wait until after we'd finished to get back to the car to see what happened, because no one had their phones on. And I think they were jamming. When people did have their phones, there was no signal. I think they were jamming signals. Well,
it's all Secret Service up there, isn't it? You know, have you seen the video things that go around on Twitter of the... Do you call him a pastor? The guy who was...
Reverend, he was.
Reverend, right? The Reverend.
The most Reverend Michael Curry.
Oh, there you go.
David Flatman.
It was like Randy Jackson, wasn't it?
Someone tweeted that he was doing 50 in a 30 zone. I love that. But then, yeah, so someone's done that montage of him. Who is it?
Is it Randy Jackson?
Coming to America? So they sort of, they got all the people's reactions like, what the fuck is this guy on about? Which I thought was great. I loved it. But then they got this brilliant montage going around social media. You should see it. It's a good experience.
So the wedding, brilliant. Most of us watched it. I mean, my missus did. I didn't, obviously. What was the after party? Where'd you go after the wedding?
So we kind of went from the chapel into a part of the cars, had the speeches, had everything else like that. Yep. Yeah, it was nice, actually. There were a lot of weapons in that. No, I'm not talking about the guests.
Yeah.
Again, we'll have to
cut that part. Saw tins up there.
Yeah. Austin Healey there, was he?
Austin,
no,
yeah.
No, they didn't get invited, did they?
He was... He was at the semi-final where he should have been. Like, yeah. Anyway, James.
And I just meant there was like the armory. I just didn't realise that every kind of available wall space was covered in old muskets, knives. If it's kicking off, I'm going Windsor Castle. If there's a zombie apocalypse, get into there and you'll never go wrong.
Do you nick anything?
It's all bolted down. And actually someone made a joke about not nicking stuff.
At Tins and Zara's wedding, I need a load of stuff from that. I had loads of cutlery, a crystal glass that was... I thought it was the Prince Philip's, but it was actually Clive's. Stole a crystal glass, and then you had to hand your phones in on the way in, and they put them in these really cool little velvet royal pouches, and I nicked like, I must have had like 12, 13 of those pouches.
Do you know loads of them.
Get my cufflinks in them now.
I still get flashbacks to that Tinder wedding.
Yeah, that was bad. Oh, yeah, that was bad. That was bad. People don't know.
There's three or four. That alone would be the basis for any autobiography.
Oh, my God.
Can you explain?
Topically, no, we can't, because the main event was Prince Harry.
This is really good, no, then, guys.
There's some even other bits and pieces.
What was their first dance? You allowed to say?
It was, they announced it was Whitney Houston.
God rest
her
soul.
Yeah.
What is it?
We're going to dance together.
Sing it?
Hey, come on.
Were you invited as well, were you? not dressed like that. Okay, so did you DJ after?
No, sadly not.
What?
I can't be careful what I can reveal and what I can't reveal, but no, they would never let me anywhere near that.
Who DJ'd? You're not allowed to reveal it.
You just don't know what you can, because bear in mind as well that all that kind of the media stuff around it, a lot of people involved don't like the media doing the media. Do you know what I mean? It's not.
Yeah.
It's not.
So if you want to know more, you've got a book coming out
available.
Soon.
Well, Tins told me that Idris Elba DJ'd. That's what Tins told me. Anyway.
Yeah, throw Tins under the bus. He's already part of the royal family. He
didn't tell me that. I was trying to stitch you up, but no, I didn't remember.
And he's had his nose done.
Have you seen his nose? It's minging. Have you seen it?
It's only ming because it's straight, isn't it?
Wow, he looks weirdly like you now. But he doesn't.
What, handsome, good looking?
No, but Tins used to be basically a ugly bloke with a characterful face and a famous wife. Now he's an ugly bloke with a famous wife. He's just. Apart from Zara, what has Tins got going for him? He's a tackle bag in the World Cup. Well done. He shouldn't have had it done. He should not have had it done.
So,
I honestly think it's an error.
Royal wedding done?
Yeah, sure.
Any more questions?
Was it brilliant?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, from my perspective, I didn't realise. I mean, again, and I told you this before, it kind of the rugby world, everyone gets very excited, but it's a very small world. So when I came out and I sort of logged onto Twitter to see how WASS had done and everything else like that, I'd obviously seen that people had thrown their toys out the pram, but then I switched off my phone and it's never been a problem since, because it's irrelevant. It's like, you know, so I didn't kind of worry too much about that. But in terms of the whole experience, it was incredible. It was everything you'd want it to be. It was unbelievably kind of moving. I thought, I know people have made jokes about that the Reverend Michael Curry, most Reverend, but what he delivered was unbelievable, and just there's so many kind of firsts on that day, and I think that
the gospel choir was great as well, wasn't it?
Incredible! Like, people started because it's obviously very formal, and you're kind of having two different kind of mixes. People wanted to start clapping when they were singing on the way out, and actually people started doing that, and it was just lots of amazing moments. Kind of when Meghan walked down the aisle on her own, is that kind of first statement. You know, there's a lot of stuff
terms as well. Wow.
There's a lot of stuff about kind of feminism in the world at the moment, all that kind of stuff. So it was quite powerful to see all that and just to be involved in it. You know, and obviously I was gutted not to be involved with WASS. You know, it's maybe my club. I've been there for 12 years. If I could have done it, I would have done. But I don't think it's fair for me to go and put, you know, anaesthetic in my foot and muddle around the field and not make a good account of myself just because I should have been at a semi-final. And like we talked about earlier, when I'm on, say, WASA playing an away game, and I'm on out doing my bits, and as you know, I love social media, and I'll post something. So many rugby fans, why are you not watching? Why are you not supporting? It's like, calm down. I've been there all week training. Relax.
Check my X-rays, mate. I've done my bit.
But it's also just people get very excited because they can't disassociate themselves that they are that passionate about it. I'm very passionate, but it doesn't mean I'm going to go and watch it on weekend. I'm going to spend all week analysing it. I've done all my bit in the week to kind of support the guys. We've been living and breathing it. So I don't happen to want to go off and watch rugby in my spare time. I do it kind of, you know, all the time. And I think it's hard for people to understand that. And I think it's cheap, easy headlines to have a dig. You know, I'm sure if I was paid to have an opinion, I would do it too.
So let's talk about WASP. So you came through the academy. How old were you when you first played for WASP? And so what do you remember
about
that?
There's a couple of things. My first thing, I was actually at school, still at school when I did a whole pre-season with WASPs. So I was kind of just turned 17 and I went to Poland with WASPs. They were kind of the first one of those teams to go to that horrific...
Because of the cryo chambers.
Wales went many times
at 17.
After that.
Yeah, cheers, thanks for that.
It was massively intense, and I'll never forget that the worst part of it was we had a team social while we were out there. And I was trying to keep a low profile. I wasn't a massive drinker. And I knew it was going to be a bad day when Lawrence came over to me and said, Haskell, welcome to WASP, my mate. Neck this. And then he necked a pint and I necked a pint. I thought that'd be right. Alex King did the same thing. Simon Shaw did the same thing. Josh Lucy did the same thing. it just went
Will Green wet himself.
Yeah. Trevor Leota, pint of rum and coke.
JD and five Big Macs.
Yeah. And that was a bad day because I was absolutely obliterated. And I remember Sean Edwards kind of taking me home, which was a scary walk back in a forest in Poland with steaming with Sean Edwards. You're right, kid.
Scary for the wolves, maybe.
Yeah. If anything attacked us, it's the last thing I'd ever do. So I remember getting into my room and getting woken up at 8:30 in the morning in absolute hell. The room's like 36 degrees. There's no water. You can't drink the tap water, or else you're definitely getting dysentery. And we had to get on a bus going to Auschwitz. It was a four-hour bus journey to Auschwitz, and I was sitting next to Craig Dowd, a man who was only slightly more drunk than I was, and confined in this bus with no air conditioning, going to the most depressing, horrific place on earth.
And I was
shown into that room where it's all just hair, where all the hair that shaved off everyone. And I was thinking, if I throw up on this this terrible moment in history, I'm never going to get out. Honestly, I was like physically shaking. Yeah. It was the worst day, and then 4 hours back, and the whole time Craig Dowd.
You can't vomit on history, can you?
And you can't vomit on Craig Dowd, or he'll kill you. So that was kind of my first experience. And then at the end of that pre-season, we went.
Bring us back up now.
Yeah, sorry. I'm just telling you the truth. That's my, you know.
Got the Holocaust in my head now.
Yeah. And then so we split the games. Half of the squad went to Bristol, and half the squad went to play in Claremont. And it was a game actually where Oriol Rougerie got Phil Greening elbowed him in the throat, and then spent years trying to sue Phil Greening, etc. So we were there, and I was 17, and I was starting, and I was playing in the back row, and they had Olivier Magne, they had kind of Mercer on at 10, they had Tony Marsh, they had all these unbelievable players, Oriol Rougerie, all these guys. And I remember I knew I was out of my depth, and we were running around the warm-up, and like Phil Greening was like calling all these moves, and I was thinking, I don't know any of this. I literally didn't know anything. And we played the game, and I remember that Olivier Magne got the ball on the wing, right? He stayed wide, and I was running across thinking, I'm going to tackle this guy. He just looked at me, out the back door, reverse, 20-metre inside spin pass to Oriol Rougerie, who scored, and I was like, perhaps rugby isn't for me. Right? And Lawrence had said to me before the game, he said, listen, always a bit tasty down here. If it kicks off, I want you in the mix, right? Lawrence Lallio, you know, king of bravado, one of my heroes. Well, he was up until he threw me out of the bus the other day. but karma will get you. And he said to me, he goes, oh, listen, I want you there. And I was like, yes, Lawrence, whatever you need, sir. Here's your boots; they're freshly polished. So anyway, middle of this thing, the big brawl with Oriol Rougerie kicks off. Right, I'm in the middle of it. Lawrence is punching someone. I turn around, this prop, front row, French guy, I just look at him, bang him, doesn't move, right? And I wasn't sure why I was banging him because he hadn't done anything to me, but it literally erupted into...
He was within range.
It was an old school carnage, so I banged him. He didn't even move. He just punched me, and at the time I had a brace just pinged out straight out of my straight out of my mouth. I was obviously a little bit dizzy, scrapping, just trying to hit anyone and everything just because I didn't want to get bollocked by Lawrence. And obviously the whole thing, it erupted into the crowd and everything else. And lo and behold, no one was able to find the videotape after the game. And it was was never seen again. But that was kind of my first introduction to professional rugby. And then I went back to school. And it kind of ruined my last year of school rugby, because once you had a taste of professionalism, you kind of go there and you become very excited and you want to get a contract, et cetera. Whereas school rugby in the last year is your last pressure-free rugby.
Yeah.
That's when I should
be the best rugby of your life.
Chip and chasing about that. But I was like training like Rocky, like, you know, diet, eating, you know, four chickens, a night, doing all this kind of stuff, taking it super seriously, analysing stuff. And I think my teammates must have thought, this guy's an absolute bore. Like, just give it a rest, mate. Yeah. We know you've been at WASP, but just calm down. So I that's my kind of my one regret. But it was pretty special for a 17-year-old to get that kind of exposure.
And now you're leaving WASP, of course, and you've left before and gone back, and you're off to Saints. But just an interesting one for me is, it's like Shanks asked, how'd you get invited to the Royal Wedding and how'd you find out you're going to be a Lion and stuff like that? I'm always interested in those conversations because they're always different. Sometimes there is no conversation. It just something becomes apparent and you speak to your agent and they've spoken to someone and whatever it is. But how did you find out that you were leaving WASPs? How did you, you know, what, do you remember sort of where you were when you found out there's nothing here for me, or what they've offered isn't enough, or whatever?
Yeah, I was walking in for my my sighting when I took Jamie Roberts' head off, which apparently they're still trying to find somewhere around the 316 in...
See what, you can't fucking miss it. Size of a cow.
Well, I know, that's what I mean. I should have had a dispensation. His chin goes halfway down his chest.
Got a skull like a mammoth.
And, to be honest, I didn't expect him to pass.
No, neither did I. I've never seen him do it.
No,
that's why I had a 20-minute run-up. I was like, I'm going to absolutely ice him here. He hasn't passed.
If you run all that way, you may as well.
I know, but it's also the old knees. I thought I'd gone way lower, and I ended up just taking his head off. And in the sighting, they're like, what were you trying to do here? I was like, I know what it looks like, but in my mind, I'd actually gone a lot lower. I just never run that fast in my life to tackle someone, and I just didn't react well enough. But anyway, I got an email press release saying, be seeing you.
Oh, really? Be seeing you. Oh, right.
Not a phone call.
They didn't write,
be
seeing you. Yeah, they didn't write, be seeing you. But yeah.
You just got an email saying, here's a press release. Yeah. And by the way, you're leaving Wasps.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean,
I'd obviously had like an initial conversation. Look, I think you know the writing's on the wall for a period of time. I think my agent was speaking to it. You know, we were pretty sure, but that was kind of the final confirmation. I'd had a chat with kind of Di earlier on in the season, and I just came out of the meeting. I was like, listen, I don't think this is going to work for next year, and I think we never spoke about money, we never spoke about financials. That was never the case. It was just a thing of, I think there's some great young players coming through at WAS. I think they decided,
namely
that,
his son.
Yeah, he is bloody good though. He is. I think Thomas is incredible. I don't know how he's not in the Welsh squad.
But there's
always that kind of that writing's on the wall situation. I think they felt there was other players that could kind of take on the journey. So that was kind of my disappointment. Then I kind of finally confirmed it when I got the press release. And I was like, okay.
That's happening then.
And then obviously, it's a very weird kind of period of time in my life, this kind of last year. Because in many ways, it's been great coming off the Lions tour. Other ways, it's been frustrating being left out with England, coming back with England, being left out again with England or rested. All those kind of bits and pieces. It's been kind of the hardest year and a half of my rugby life ever, really, just because it's always been, because I'd love to have finished my career at WAS. I would have loved to have done that, the most romantic thing, you know, finish it as you would have wanted, lifting silverware, but it doesn't happen like that. You know, Eddie Jones saying, listen,
unless you're Lowell, then
big Lowell. He knows where all the bodies are buried, that's why he was how long do you want this time, Lawrence? 10 years, please. But you're 35,
correct? You're made of leather. 10 years,
yeah, exactly. Half your body's gone to medical science, Lowell. So you get romantic way out. Other guys have to leave, and I think, you know, I obviously sometimes was sad about that whole situation, but then you look at it, very few players get to finish as they would have wanted. You know, your Conrad Smith, your Mar Nonus, you guys are finishing on a World Cup and then deciding to go and play in France and do a bit more. That's all on their terms. You know, Richie McCaw retiring in a World Cup final. Very rarely do people get that. A lot of people end up carried out on a stretcher. Or exit through the side door, and I'm going through the side door, and it is what it is. And I think what people don't understand is that this is a job. What we do, we essentially get beaten up for a living. It's attritional. It's a full time occupation. And you know, people talk about loyalty. People talk about everything, but it's hard sometimes for fans to understand. But it's business. It's always business. It's strictly business. And if you go into life with a romantic ideal that it's anything other than business, you're going to get caught out. I left WAS before, so. This time round, the emotion was less because if I'd stayed at one club my whole time and not seen the world, not experienced different things, and even if I hadn't been left out with England, you know, you think the world's going to end when you don't play for England, and you realise that no one gives a shit, and it just goes on, and people play and people win, and you're you know, 3 weeks from retiring, no one knows who you are anymore. So if you go into it and compartmentalise and understand that's the situation, then I was disappointed, but you know, it was what it was, and now I've got a new exciting journey with Saints starting.
Yeah. So why Northampton then?
So I looked at lots of different...
Well, I heard that you... And this is all inside knowledge and it could all be balls, but when you're like you and you're big and you're brash and you're articulate and you love social media, you're all over social media, you're happy to have a laugh, you're also very happy to promote yourself and the stuff you do, which is the game, there are people who assume that you are all about... People call you the brand Haskell as a joke and people think you're obsessed with money, but I happen to know you a bit better than that, and I heard on the grapevine that you got some very nice offers from different places, different countries, perhaps a bit French, a bit Japanese, and you've chosen to stay here and actually play for Northampton, you know, for reasons other than pure cash, right? So it's kind of, we don't want to talk about money on the thing, but it's one of those things that people think that you just take the biggest offer, but that's actually not the case, is it?
No, not at all. I mean, with this decision, I had lots of things to kind of weigh up in my mind. You know, did I want to try to fight for my place in the World Cup squad? You know, did I want to stay here and play for another Premiership club, which I've never done? Did I want to go and experience, you know, Super 15 again? Did I want to go and play in France? I'm obviously coming towards the end of my career. What's going to help me transition? It was very hard. And obviously, there was a lot of times where people didn't ever assume I was going to leave Wasps. So it's very hard. So when you're in contract, normally your agent goes and calls up Leicester Tigers and says, oh, James is out of contract. Would you like him? And obviously, initially, first two or three times, they go, well, possibly they don't want me, but hypothetically, if they did, they would say, oh, yes, we'll pay him X. You then go back to Wasps and say, oh, Leicester Tigers are going to pay me this. How much are you going to pay me? And then, yeah, you know, normally they don't believe you. And then you have to kind of do everything like as if you're going to leave, and then you get the kind of deal done and it's done.
Yeah.
But, you know, a lot of people, when I said I was going to leave Wasps, they didn't believe it. So it meant that they all thought they were being kind of used as like leverage against other
bang
other
your money business. Up. Yeah, a bit. Yeah.
So when it did get announced, obviously lots of deals had been done. So it was a situation of me going and weighing all this kind of stuff up, seeing what was available. And one side that I always admired and were kind of Wasps' nemesis for a while were Northampton. They've had some incredible players play for them in their time, and I know this year hasn't gone that well for them, but they've got some great guys and they're so hungry to be successful that when I spoke to them and it gave me an opportunity to keep playing in England, I thought that's what I wanted to do, because whether I am good enough anymore, I believe that I showed that in against France and against Ireland, but there are great players around, and I don't want to be the guy that's still banging the drum when everyone can see that you're not there. But I would hate to say it in a year's time, if I'd gone to France or gone to Japan, look back and gone, couple of injuries, you know, I would be back in the mix. I don't think I could live with myself, especially as I've always done everything in my career to be the best rugby player. I think a lot of people misunderstand that I've maximised everything in life, because I believe you get one shot at it and you've got to do everything. So I do everything, DJing, speaking, whatever it is. And people say, oh, look, you're not focusing on your rugby. That's bullshit. My whole day is centred around my rugby. You know, I've always spent money on my own physios, my own trainers, my own nutritionists, you know, doing everything to be the best rugby player I can be. So with that in mind and the way I've lived my career, to then give up on a World Cup, you know, because I said to Eddie, I spoke to these conversations, I was like, listen, if I'm dust, then I'll go. But as I showed with the Six Nations, that I still feel there's something for me to do, and it's going to be an uphill climb, but I'd like to give it every possible shot, see what happens, and then in a year's time, you know, reflect knowing that I could have done no more.
So he's told you you're not dust.
I think that's just a clap is what I was going to say.
But he does always tell me that he's carrying my P45 around in his pocket.
Yeah. And he told me that about you as
and
well.
When I play against France, he said, he goes, mate, it's amazing how fast you run when someone's chasing you with a P45. And he keeps going this. He keeps going, I've got it for your esk. I've got it for your honestly, all the time. And I'm like, ah. Going back to my room and give myself a Chinese burger.
Are you going there to sort of just play any position you get told, or is there a certain position you want to play?
Yeah, again, you know, all through my kind of career, everyone said, you know, what's your favourite position? I think, personally, and I know we all have views on what sevens look like and what everything else, and we all believe there should be a certain thing. My hero kind of was Rich McCaw, so and kind of guys like Pocock, and I love them. And I think every time I've played seven, I've absolutely loved it, because it was something for the first part of my career I hadn't really done. And a good friend of mine, Tom Rees, played there. We were always playing six and seven. And when I got the opportunity to play seven, especially for England, I absolutely loved it. I'm not precious. I'll play anywhere that they want me to play. And I think with speaking to Boyd at Northampton, you know, he obviously wants to see how people fit in, you know, because back row is all about balance. It's not about numbers on the back. It's, no. You guys have got to complement each other. You don't have to have, you know, you don't have to be, you know, 5'6" to be great to steal a ball. You know, everybody needs to be able to tackle. Everyone needs to be able to compete for the ball. Everyone needs to be a big ball carrier, because it's all about the gain line. So if you get the balance right, or if you have someone that's such a great carrier, but his work rate means that he's not getting to rucks, and you've got to balance that, got to balance it out. And I'll be interested to see what happens. I am a bit nervous, because it's going to be kind of first day of school syndrome, and as you can imagine, for someone like myself, there's lots of people I know, but there's also lots of preconceptions. So I just have to go in there and you know, my new school uniform on and
chin everyone.
That's it. Just start.
But that's just what whack 'em, mate.
You say that one, that first session in Poland, right? Yeah. The stupidest career move I've ever made. We're doing a mauling session, right? And we were like the B team against the A team. Trevor Liotta, right?
Yeah. Don't chin him.
Well, mauling session. Cheating. cheating once, cheating twice, right? Everyone's like, ah, Trevor, someone's got to do him. I was like, ah, I'll do him. Did he know, right? in the middle of a mall, he came to the side, cheated. I pulled him out of the mall, uppercut, tackled him onto the floor, right straight. Did absolutely nothing to him.
Yeah.
Him, one short left, split my eye, split my face, right? Everyone's like, right, right, anyway, finish the session. Trevor comes over, gives me a big hug. Right, bro, good work, eh? And I was like, okay, he's not going to kill me. And then for the next 3 weeks, Gats used to come up and just rub my shoulders and go, there's my boy, Hesk, there's my boy, hey. You keep beating up Trevor, you'll be getting on well with us. And I was like, and he absolutely loved it. And that's, I think, that's why he started. He could not have been more happy. So every time I did something like that, Gats, do you know what he's like? He'd just stand there smiling like, good, mate, good.
Yeah, and wheezing a bit.
Yeah. So that was never take on Trevor Leota.
Shit, no, at anything except long distance running.
Yeah.
77 caps for England, is that right?
Yes.
Off the top of my head, well done, mate.
You cannot nick 77 caps. You can't.
You can't.
Well played, Ask.
You can have a good go at it, but you can't. Yeah.
So what sort of, you've been sort of in and out a little bit of the England squad. Are there any periods that you look back now, not that you're finished, but really fondly of your time with England?
I've got to say that the time under to Eddie, even though the last Six Nations was very tough, all the time under Eddie, I just feel that, you know, winning caps is important. And you know, I'm disappointed, obviously, not to be going on tour because I want to play for my country. And once you're in it sometimes and you're getting picked every week and you're involved and it's not, there's no uncertainty about whether you're going to get another one, you kind of take it for granted. But when you're suddenly out of it, you're like, I want every cap, every moment to be involved in that white shirt. And I think under Eddie, winning the Grand Slam, you know, because you can have, you know, I had, I don't know, 60-odd caps, something like that, and we hadn't won any proper silverware. Like, we'd won the Six Nations, but we got beaten by Ireland away. So it's, you got absolutely pumped, you've lost the Grand Slam, but here's a trophy. It's very disappointing. So to get that Grand Slam and actually do something in England shirt that no one can take away, that's so complicated, so hard, that I lost in three games to win a Grand Slam previously to that, and to actually, you know, to win it on the third one against France away was amazing. To go to Australia, where we'd never won before in lots of places, or only won once, and to get that whitewash was incredible. And I know a lot of boys turned
around. Man of the series.
I wasn't going to mention that, but...
Oops, sorry about that.
Yeah. A round of applause.
Guilty. No, but the thing with it was, for example, with Eddie, is that we boys talked and said, look, we would have traded half the caps to win more silverware and be in better environments. Because once you have a good environment, you realise how lucky you are, and when you're winning stuff, how lucky that is to do that. And that's the most important thing. And even in my first few years at WASS, I was spoiled. You know, two premierships, Heineken Cup, Power Gin Cup, Middlesex, everything. We won everything. And then we haven't won any silverware since. And, you know, my time at Stade Francais, we didn't win. Highlanders, we didn't win. You know, playing in Japan, we didn't win. And
Rico Black Rams.
You just didn't take the... you kind of just take it for granted. And now silverware is such a commodity. And that when you do win it, there's nothing more bonding of a team than winning stuff.
Yeah. Who was your first cap against?
Wales. You won it. You were playing, weren't you?
What year was it?
2007.
Who won?
Yeah. Where was it? Wales won.
2007.
2007, last game of the Six Nations.
That's right. We'd lost every
was
single
White
game.
Was White Lightning
we'd
in the midfield, was it?
We'd lost every single game bar that one. Yeah. So it didn't matter in the end. We got cheered, we got clapped out. Yeah, another Welshman there.
That's where we were. Yeah. We were driving through, and my first game on the bus, and we were driving through Cardiff. And, you know, Welsh were like waving... You know, I remember there's this grandma. She's waving like that, and I wave back, and she just give it that one. Right?
He's putting his finger up for those of you that
put my finger up.
Can't see.
Video.
Listening.
And like people were swearing and throwing stuff at the bus. It was incredible, right? And then I remember just about to drive into the stadium, this Welsh guy ran out and just headbutted the front of the bus.
I heard about that. Yeah,
split his head, and just like stumbled off. And I was like, where am I? And what the hell is going on? And everywhere we've ever been, Ireland the same, people swearing, doing everything, all these. And with English fat, you know, if you start wearing a St. George's flag and going too much, you're immediately the leader of the BNP. So you've got to be like, it's not quite, we don't get sport with the same kind of nationalistic
You're
thing.
All welcome, you're all very welcome.
Yeah, everyone's like, bravo, bravo, may the best team win. Going to Wales, getting firebombed as you're going into the stadium.
Yeah, but good night out though, isn't it? What was your first song? Do you have to sing a song?
Yeah, I sung...
Artful Dodger.
No, you don't always have to fuck hard by Tenacious D. right? And I stood up at the front of the bus, and obviously being ever the showman, I started singing this song, and Brian Ashton was there, and I was like, "Don't always have to hard," right? And about 3 minutes into the song, Brian Ashton went, "Oh, do sit down, you silly boy."
So, yeah, he wouldn't like that.
Yeah.
Big Earn would not like that.
So, that was great. I've actually latterly, when had to sing other songs, I've gone for Build Me Up Buttercup or Why Don't You Love Me Baby.
I remember in a session once with Brian Ashton at Bath, we're doing a mauling session, and he had this new tactic where our forwards coach didn't like it. Our forwards coach at the time, Michael Foley, the Australian, a brilliant coach, he used to like to name the forward pack on a Tuesday morning, because then you knew for the unit session, scrums, lineouts, mauls, whatever it was, rucking in the morning, you knew the pack, so you could start working together on the Tuesday. But Brian Ashton said, this week we're going to do it differently, and we're not going to name the forward pack and the back line until lunchtime, and then we'll train together this afternoon. So two things happened on that day. We realised we had two sessions instead of one, pissed off. And we realised that no one had been picked for the weekend. So basically it was war. So we had to go and get picked. We'll see how you perform in the session. We'll see who we're going to pick. They knew who they were going to pick. But we had this line-out mauling session, and there was a massive almost fight, like a football fight, where everyone's pushing and shoving and swearing and that sort of stuff. And Ashy absolutely hated it. And he flew in, and we were like, God, he must really not want us to scrap. And then a couple of minutes later, Matt Stevens actually chinned one of the other props, and he really smacked him, and it all just kicked off. He was on the other team, and it all just kicked off, and it was an all-in. It was one of the only ones I ever had in training. It was all-in, getting whacked from every angle, swinging punches, punching your own team. It was flat out, because everyone wanted to play against whoever it was, fucking Bedford or Rotherham. It was like, this was everything. It was life or death, right? Unleashing hell, no one landing a shot. So we're flying in, and Brian Ashton, there's videos of him. Brian Ashton was just standing there, and he's like, look at them, they're fighting. And afterwards, we were like, we saw the video the next day. We like reviewed Ashy. We watched Ashy for the whole thing on the analyst video. And they were like, so you piled in and stopped us first time, but second time it was right. He goes, yeah, but first time it was just the language. Language. we're like, doof, doof, doof. And you see, so it all kicks off. And there's Gareth Delve was in. Remember Gareth Delve?
Yeah, he was handy.
Gareth Delve, right? Danny Grew got obviously hard guys, a lot of hard guys around. And I play with some of the hard guys, played against backies, both of those guys. I don't know if I'd back anyone who's not a trained boxer to beat Delvey in a fight. And I include Danny Grewcock in that. Like nobody fucked with Delvey, nobody. So it kicked off, and I was on Borthas' side, and Borthas just whacked Delvey like in the side of the head, and Delvey turned around and went, and we didn't see it on the video. We didn't see it till the video afterwards, but Michael Foley, our coach, he literally ran in like this going, no! Because Delvey was about to kill Borthas, who's like his son and king of the team, line-out king. No! And he jumps in, and he properly like high tackles. He clotheslines Borthas back over himself, like over his knees. No! Like this over Borthas. The rest of us are all getting pounded by Delvey. They're like, no, Steve! Anyway, saved his life. Delvey was going to kill him.
But there is that thing where there's a video of Gareth Delve fighting, I think, in a game, and like people are throwing punches. He's slipping punches, picking people off. Same with Trevor Raines. Trevor Raines against Irish, the Gloucester fight against Irish, and most people are haymakering. And anyone who knows anything about boxing, everyone's fighting up here, but he's throwing body shots, uppercuts, slipping punches, literally dusting people down, slipping like that. And that's the most terrifying thing, because you have a brawl, that's fine, but suddenly you punch someone and he's not where you thought he was, and he's suddenly uppercutted you and you're folded up like a deck chair. It was horrible.
A bit like the Matt Banahan video you told me to watch on YouTube.
Oh, yeah.
Of him,
you ever seen Banner's
jersey?
Oh, my God. Banner's can throw him. Yeah. Luckily, he's a lovely bloke. But Delvey is a lovely man off the field. On the field, he was injured a lot at Bath. But he was one of those guys that if you mess with him, you mess with him once and once only. I'd like to see him have a fight with Dan Barr, actually. I'd like to see Mike Tyson have a fight with Dan Barr.
I'd like to see him in Ascot.
He'd just be smoking punks at Ascot. Yeah, it'd be game over.
Dan Barr, that would be incredible, that. His whirlwind.
Dan Barr used to play for Canada. He's now strength and conditioning at Wasps, isn't he? And he's a little bit crazy, isn't he?
He's like a giant sirloin steak of aggression, like absolute roid and all. I'm not saying he's obviously done any bits and pieces, but like, he's just incredible shape, like just drinks 17 cups of coffee a day, you know, smashes Red Bull in between the coffees, and he's just sheer aggression.
I remember squatting, there was some weights on the bar, and it was like 100 kg, and I was just doing some
warming
squats,
up.
And then Dan would just come along when I racked it and just shoulder press it.
Yeah.
Like,
Yeah.
No bender the knees, nothing.
I mean, his first day at WASC, there was like records on the wall that was like, all right, bench press, someone's done 220. He put it on, repped it out for five, and he's like, man, records don't mean anything. And just put this, he goes, it's not going to make you a better player, and just walks off. So every time I get into him every day about everything. Because the other day we were doing a warm up, and he goes, right, guys, air squats. And I was like, what? What? Dragon kicks. So I obviously, for the whole session, was running around going, aqua squats, air squats. And he's like, veins are going up. Because we got on real well, he
won't attack you.
He won't attack me, but I think there's even a tipping point. I remember that one time in a session that people weren't warming up properly and messing around, and he shouted, he goes, you MF, you know.
You can say it, yeah, it's fine.
If you don't start training properly, I'm going to haul you till you die. There's no game this weekend. Die said I can do it. We're like, oh, yeah. Oh my God. Like, what do you mean? He's like, I'm going to make you do fitness until you bleed. I'm like, okay. Yeah. I'm like, literally, everyone was like, ha, straight, like, high Bloody. Knees, everything else.
He and speaks like B.A. Baracus, by the way. Yeah, yeah. He still calls Die Ted, does he? Yeah.
Ted?
Yeah.
Why is that?
It's his name, nickname.
Yeah. Dan Barr called me Honey in a game once. There was like, we were playing against Cardiff, and like, I was, John Humphreys was on the floor, and I was shooing him, a bit of a cheap shot. And then I saw a fist like swing past my face, and it was Andrew Lewis, the old Welsh prop. Remember Andy Lewis?
Yeah.
And he swung, and I was like, woof, and he swung again, and he just missed both times, luckily, because he was hidden behind someone else. Otherwise, I'd have been asleep, because it went quite quickly past my face. And I sort of moved back out of the way, and I was like, whoa, and he goes, oh, you gutless bastard. I said, I dodged a punch, mate. It's not gutless. And afterwards, we had a little push and a shove, and Dan Barr came in and he said, you okay, honey? Yeah, you all right, honey? It's like, fine, absolutely fine. Wait, I played against the week before, so like a week before, I'd have been like, do you want to go? But I'd sent him the week before, and I was like, I do not want to go with you. Yeah, I'm happy to concede that.
He's the one that used to kick off, right? And he would, about 5 metres away from where the bloke was going to catch it, would take off. So he was like a flying surfboard.
Rocket man.
And he would either fold the guy up or brutally knock himself out. Yeah. And it was terrible. And he was like, wanted to kill people, literally.
He's like Lewis Moody, but not with the body of a schoolboy.
Yeah, yeah.
Hello, hello. Will you come back now?
Welcome back, everybody. This is part two of the Flats and Shanks weekly podcast with James Haskell, who we've established is a nice man and has got meaty. I've got that T-shirt, by the way.
In the size that fits. Mine's too small. Mine's a bit, it's a bit, I think what's happened is it's...
Is that Chloe's?
It used to fit, and then it's been put in the tumble dryer, and it's shrunk now, so it's got to go on the charity box. Yeah. Well, along with the rest
give
of
it
my
to Shanks. Just actually, he's got arms like noodles. Give it to Shanks.
I was just commenting on Flats' dress, which has actually, it's got a lot better this last sort of 18 months.
Do you know why?
Black is very slimming as well, so I'd like to see you in a white T-shirt one day.
It's because you're working outside in that homemade gym, eating steaks every 5 minutes.
Yeah, correct.
If anyone follows you on social media, that seems to be your life. Training outside, it looks like a very cold, quite grassroots setup, but looks effective.
With electric lawnmowers. I have grills that are just outside my little garage.
Traeger, isn't it? You got one of them?
I've got a Traeger.
I'm actually getting one of them tomorrow.
That's you, is it?
Yeah.
Yeah, I thought so. I chat with those guys. I think Owen Farrell got one, put me in touch with Owen Farrell as well, and I think Bafes is going to get one as well. But they're genuinely amazing bits of kit.
But I need to learn how to actually barbecue. Oh,
I've got the ultimate guy who will come to
he's
you.
He's coming
and
to my house tomorrow.
It. Yeah, Marcus.
Yes.
He's the man.
Devin
Woodsmoke.
Yes.
Marcus, good mate of mine. There is no one better at cooking anything outdoors than Marcus.
And you reckon I'll pick up a lot pretty
honestly,
quickly.
Mate, right, he's fine. A genius.
Because I just put sausages and...
And get his number and keep... He loves it when you text him on Christmas Day saying, how long for a turkey? He actually does. Yeah. I text him relentlessly Christmas Day every year, cook everything outside.
Best turkey
you've had,
though,
I've got a little weights rack, so I do my...
I've seen it.
Squats, deads, bench.
My favourite one was when you were doing that, the shuttles. And it, you know, when you were doing the shuttle, and it was like, I can imagine that if you were any sort of vehicle, you'd be a small outboard thing that would be like a boat that would be like, and as you got quick on the turns, it was, and then it would go again. Pure diesel, absolute
milk
diesel.
Milk float, mate. Yeah. It was just a milk float.
Waddling like a duck.
Yeah, not as bad as Corb, so if you follow Corb on social media, he obviously he's got himself in great nick, but his knees still are on backwards, he can't run. So he's doing shuttles. It's like, listen, mate, you retired because them knees are dusted. Don't worry about
it. He's like Big Bob Casey with his knees. You can hear his knees clapping each other on the way past. Just like, that's going to chafe on the way past.
I never forget when I walk upstairs, one of my ankles clicks, and I remember Owen Farrell just poking his head around going, is that you, mate? And I was like, yeah. And he's like, time to get a new ankle in it, pal. And literally yeah. just shut his door, but he found it hysterical that I was creaking away.
Are you still big mates with Owen Farrell?
Yeah, that's that band that got out of hand, that.
Yeah.
No,
so can you explain what you'd actually did? Because some people don't follow rugby that much. One's doing a crossword at the back.
That was amazing.
She came over and asked me if I knew what 18 across was, four letters.
18 down.
Pale.
Was, yeah.
Pale.
Of skin.
Well, no, I don't know why she asked me.
By the way, I've got a mate who's a crossword genius. Fair is the answer we got. We actually guessed that ourselves. And by the way...
When you said we, I did.
By the way, seven down, which you haven't got, is heel or sole. By the way, it's part of a foot.
There's generally this woman at the back who's literally got earplugs. Yeah, crossword. Doing a crossword. Her husband's obviously brought her along in hell.
Yeah, the tears in her eyes.
Yeah, but the Owen Farrell sort of vlogs you were doing.
Yeah, so again, it kind of all started organically, as kind of all good stuff does, really.
It began orgasmically. It was a wonderful...
It did. And I think it was quite nice, because obviously Owen, is the ultimate professional. He's so dedicated in what he does. And even though I'd like to pride myself on being similar, I obviously... don't mind a bit of media, don't mind a bit of this, and I don't see it as a distraction. So I kind of, when Owen, who doesn't like that kind of stuff, when I realised that I could make him react really awkwardly, and also because he is a funny guy, once you sort of chip away at the real serious layer, he was involved, and it was one of those things that just kept getting more and more views. The only problem is everyone's taking it so seriously, so I still get tweets, how's your best mate? Is he your best mate? And if you ask Owen, he probably says he hates me, so it's a little bit awkward.
I did ask him, actually.
Yeah, he probably says I'm all right.
I asked him on telly and he goes, well, he said, the thing is, he's a good bloke, but as soon as the camera comes on, it's all about him, isn't it?
that's what he says. That's what he says every time. He says...
I was like, yeah, I hate that.
He says he's got to say... I've got a saying. He's got a saying for me. It's like, out for coffee, out for dinner, out for physio, out for himself. That's what he says. He goes, where are you, mate? Team were doing... I was actually out for coffee, getting some physio. I was like, all right, out for physio, out for coffee, out for yourself. But he goes, every time the camera's on, you just turn into such an asshole. I'm like, yeah, sorry. So it was funny, but it kind of got to a point where I think he was getting increasingly uncomfortable with it. So I just stopped.
And we don't talk anymore.
Who would be your big mates then in the England setup? Who do you hang around with? Who do you have food with?
I'm one of these guys, mainly because nobody likes me, but I'm one of these people.
There's a seat then.
Yeah. I have no, same at WASP, same everything. I don't have any social group. You know, there's...
We're going to say friends then.
Yeah, well, none of them either. But, there's a lot in any team, there's kind of some cliques that stay together. Even the best will in the world, there's always teammates who stay together, guys you prefer to sit down. I literally will sit with anyone, talk to anyone, kind of react with it, with anyone. I spent a bit of time with Owen because, we all love a coffee and everything else. Dylan Hartley, Danny Kerr, Courtney, when you can prize him away from playing World of Warcraft or Clash of Clans or whatever he's doing. So all those kind of boys. But as I said, anyone who's going out for a coffee, anyone's doing anything, at dinner, I'll sit down.
Anyone sociable, you're out. Yeah.
I just always like doing that. And then nobody invites me anywhere and I find out they've all gone out.
Apart from Prince Harry, though.
Yeah.
What's your relationship like? Well, I mean, we probably know this, but Michael Dobson on Twitter has asked your relationship like with... is there any unresolved tension between you and Joe Marler? Because you had that little spat in the game and you did quite a nice little MMA throw on that.
I did. I was pleased with that as well. And again, all the sort of...
I mean, what sparked it off was he squirted a little bit of water in your face.
Yeah. Well, again, and everyone's like, you reacted or made jokes about squirting water in my face. It was the very fact that I was getting... I think yellow carded at the point and getting choked, and Joe is the ultimate wind-up merchant, and I hadn't played in kind of 8 weeks, so as there's quite a level of aggression brewing whenever you're kind of not playing, and that's why you kind of, when you're playing every week, that's fine, but if you don't play, you start getting getting aggressive, but you start getting angry with your missus, you start getting angry with your mate, everything else, because you're not getting that kind of opportunity to vent. And I just come on the field And Joe was choking me out with my head guard, and then I did what I thought was a very naughty MMA, took side control.
Would
have full ground and pound if we were throwing punches.
Game over,
but you can't do that.
He's a big bloke as well, and he made him look like a bit of paper.
And then we were getting off, he squirted water in my face, and I was like, right, my head's come off here. But everyone goes, you lost it. I go, no, I didn't, because I didn't throw any punches.
Yeah.
You know how...
10 years ago, you'd have chinned him, but you can't anymore.
The thing is, I didn't throw any punches, and I love Joe. And the thing with that is there was absolutely no bad blood, no nothing. He just went, you lost your head. I went, yeah, I did, yeah. And because he was so pleased, I got a yellow card.
Yeah, I bet he was, yeah.
It was a perfect thing. But I've never had any grudges. I absolutely love Joe. And I literally texted him after. I was like, sorry, mate, head did come off there. And he goes, it did a bit. But the worst of it was, as I was walking off, Danny Care.
Got you, yeah.
Got me. And yeah. honestly, I took one look at Danny Care and I was like, it just wouldn't be fair.
Yeah.
but also, he's a horrible, nasty little scrap. And I reckon if you got him, he'd boot you in the head. Do you know what I mean? He'd be like gnarly, like bite your ear off.
Yeah, when you're down, he's kicking you in the
head. That's what I mean.
Yeah.
And he'd also be gouging and stamping. He looks lovely, he ain't.
And also, the worst thing is that he's got great footwork and he's so difficult. He would have had to be slightly closer for me to get him. Because there's a time where I remember playing against Quinns and there's a tap penalty 5 metres from the line. And I literally got up and he just stepped me and scored, but luckily he hadn't taken it on the mark, but I was completely embarrassed. He just gets up and he's like that, yeah, smiling and laughing at me, giving me a wink. I'm like, don't do that, Danny.
Do we have any questions in the audience? Put your hand up if you've got a question.
Yeah, we've got one down there on the right.
Just before here, Dowie Morris on Twitter, not the Dowie Morris, so you're right. He says, Bants or body that secured Chloe?
Chloe assures me, and as you can imagine, that looks play no role in
no.
Yeah, obviously. And I when I first started kind of serenading her,
did you serenade her?
You're so
Chloe,
romantic.
My yeah. Chloe.
I did. Let your hair down, Chloe. Courting her.
Yeah.
When I was courting her, I got a number and we were kind of talking and I was speaking to her on the phone for about 45 minutes and I thought I was on fire. She was laughing. But then I look back and she must have told me to stop with, I know exact words, but stop with all this rugby banter. I'm not one of your teammates. So obviously I wasn't making such a good impression as I kind of thought I was.
And shagging stories, where do I start?
who's got a question here? Say your name and your question.
That was right. Sorry.
Hi, my name's Stan.
Really? Hang on, how old are you, Stan?
37.
Hang on, 1981 you were born.
My dad Stanley, my granddad Stanley.
Hang on, 1981, okay, that's fair enough. 1981, I reckon you might be the only person who was named Stan that year.
You know, we were looking at something the other day. We were looking online that there are like 6 or 7 names that are completely dying out for men.
Gary,
Terry.
Aaron.
Stan.
Yeah.
Stan, died out a long
Colin,
time ago, mate.
Colin.
Cheers.
Graham. My dad's called Graham. Ever Nigel. Met a 10-year-old called Graham?
Oh yeah, who's looking down at a kid going, all right, baby, Nigel?
Yeah, Nigel, Clive, Stan. Anyway, sorry, Stan. Sorry,
yeah, thanks.
No, it's all right. Continue, Avu.
I've had it for 37 years, it's fine. So, going back to your point earlier about back row balance.
Yes.
If Eddie all of a sudden had a wild imagination and said, Hask, you're going to get the captaincy for the World Cup, I want to build my back.
Wouldn't be that wild, mate.
Well, you know.
Steady on,
Stan. Wouldn't be that unfounded. What, if hell froze over?
Having nicked 77 caps and been a liar, we're going to make you a senior player.
If I actually became a wizard and, Okay, yeah. In an impossible 17th dimension where I was actually made captain, yeah?
No. Genuinely. Yeah. And we've seen you play some fantastic rugby. All about back row balance. If the back row was built around you, who would you want with you? Who were the two players, England players, that can genuinely complement your game? So these aren't who do you think's the best. This is who complement you the best.
Mike Teague. Peter Winterbottom.
Yeah.
Okay, this is... Yeah, I would say that my... And I would love playing with all the back row guys, and I'll caveat, and you're right, it's not about the best players. It, for me, it would be Billy and Chris Robshaw. Because I think we've played together. I think we kind of work well together. Mm. But again, to be honest with you, I've loved playing with with Nathan and I'd be interested to see, say you had an opportunity with Sam. I mean, I quite enjoy playing 6 and 7 with Jack Willis or someone like Sam Underhill. Do you know what I mean? Playing those different positions. But I think those two guys I've always kind of really enjoyed. And actually, I find that when Rob and I play together, especially, I think we kind of complement each other quite well, and we've not. It's been a shame because I was thinking about it the other day. I've really enjoyed having a kind of a partnership with him, but because I don't play at the same club, we kind of only ever meet up with England, get on very well, kind of really enjoy going out to battle together, but don't often get the opportunities or don't ever often kind of get said, talked about as a good pairing. But I quite enjoy them.
And actually, that's when England were arguably at the best under Eddie Jones. Is when that was the back row because it was almost like you. You almost had a really nice blend. You talk about the compliments. You had Billy. It's almost like having you and Robbo on the sides means that Billy's a hard-working guy for 130-kilo bloke, and he's got a hell of an engine on him when he's fully fit. But actually, it allowed him to perhaps probably make fewer tackles, visit fewer rucks, because you had Robbo, who's just pure work, pure stats, and you had you, who registers a huge amount of stats but has a little bit more, you know, power than, say, Rob Shaw. So it's a nice blend. And then you've got Billy, who's kind of fast twitch explosive, but he probably needs to rest between huge efforts. So it kind of worked beautifully, didn't it?
Yeah, I do genuinely believe that it's not about what players look like or what the perception is. It's got to be down to balance of what you're trying to achieve. And again, there was a lot of confusion over this, well, not confusion, but talk about the back row in the Six Nations, failure to adapt, failure to run the breakdown. And for me, I think a lot of that's rubbish. I think a lot of that is people who don't really understand rugby picking up bits and pieces and commenting on stuff. When people always think that the back row are responsible for the breakdown, it's not. It's a 15-man obligation to clear people out properly. And when we played against Scotland, they did something that we hadn't seen very often in the Premiership at all, sending two guys to compete for the breakdown, which actually, with some of the new rulings, they did it so well, especially did France, where they arrived exactly the same time, so the referee couldn't determine who was there first. So you've got two guys competing. You know, we were used to sending less guys to breakdown. You have to have one man, one bullet. You have to have that ability to clear. I think that, you know, as a team, we probably weren't spot on. And if you have to understand as well, people go, well, you know, you're not stealing ball at the breakdown. Defensively, that wasn't our defensive system. We were having men on feet. We were trying to do that. Obviously, tactically, that's something where we've had to learn, adapt and go back. Because week in, week out in the Premiership, you know, you have one tackler, one guy on the breakdown. No competing. And I think post-Six Nations, teams have started to compete a bit more. And I think it's going right back to that competition again now, all the time. And I think that defensively, England now adjusting, so there will be a lot more competition around the breakdown, a lot more guys, you know, able to do that. But I think it's just people who don't know about stuff commenting, oh, the back row didn't sort of, you know, and I think unfairly kind of had a go at people like Courtney, et cetera, when it's a 15-man job to do that. And they were very good at it, and they just presented a picture that we hadn't seen. So I think it's important to know when you're putting a team together, who's going to be destructive tacklers, who's going to be our carriers, because it is all gain line. You know, you can, you know, when you've got Mako as kind of your main ball carrier, you need someone like Billy as well to take the workload off him. You know, you need your back row boys need to be destructive. It's all about stopping people on the game line. And now you need to have the ability to compete as well. And if you've got all of that, that's fine. Or you could have an out-and-out seven who's incredible, who'll go to 30 rucks, compete on everything. But then you need two guys who are going to be off the floor who are really good at tackling, and then we're going to be able to break, you know, get the ball carries, because the guy might not be as powerful. So it is all about that. It's
your line-out option as well these days.
That's the thing. Yeah. Everyone's got their line-out option. And if you choose not to, you then handicap yourself elsewhere. And teams are now, there's so much analysis going on that, you know, people always say, oh, we'd love to have him in the team. But everyone wants Steph Armitage, you know, incredible player. You know, credible. Pardon?
Incredible,
yeah, well, yeah, but great ball, for someone like the size, carrying and everything else. But then there was always the question of the kind of the work rate stuff or the line-out option. But if he does what he does and did it so well, then you've got to look at the other two players you would have. And that's what a lot of people don't really take into account.
Okay, questions? Yeah.
Good stuff. Yes, mate, go for it.
Hi, it's Pete. There's a couple of us here from Reading Abbey Rugby Club, which is the...
Is that Jack Willis's old club, yeah, by any chance? I thought it was,
The junior club. No, but also Jack and... three. Jack and Tom Willis, firstly, what have you made of them this season? How do you see the future? And also, you spoke about the new breed, both of them are the new breed players pushing through at Wasps. But also, have you spoken to Jack since his injury last weekend? Because obviously, Owen, you know, is innocuous at best. He's missing out on his first senior tour. He's a bright future for England and for Wasps moving forward. You know, what advice would you give him and indeed Tom moving forward?
Three questions, mate, okay? You've taken the piss.
Yeah.
All right, you're taking the piss there, mate.
I spoke to Jack. I spoke to him already. That he's put a funny video up of him whizzing around in a wheelchair because he's actually he played the game with a broken ankle, undiagnosed from 2 weeks before that he thought it was sore. So he's now got a broken ankle and obviously whatever he's done.
He's not off going on about it though.
Yeah. Well, to be fair, I pulled out with a bruised foot, and now makes me look like the biggest pussy in the world. Jack Willis is playing with, but that's probably why he's been picked for England, and that Wasser kept him and fucked me out the back door.
Very good point.
Yeah.
Very good point.
As long as you're self-aware, it's okay. I think he's great. I think he's got a skill set and ability that you can't really coach. You know, he's got kind of hyper mobility, so he gets himself into incredible positions that you just can't coach that. It doesn't matter how many years you could spend all your time practicing it. You know, the guy
like Tony Finau, the golfer, did he just get his ankle back in?
Yeah.
Oh
yeah.
Leading the Masters after one day.
Yeah.
Incredible.
And, I was messing around. I was sitting on a physio bed, and Jack Willis was sitting next to me. And if any of you follow me on Instagram, I put a video up, and he's standing there holding his toe and his leg up here, right? And I tried to do it and almost gave myself that. a back spasm. Yeah. And then I was filming. He did it, and he literally put his head on his knee, sitting up. And he's just got this incredible ability. And he's been so good over the ball. I think he's a great ball carrier. He's got a massive future. Yeah. I think he started off with Wasps. There was a few injuries initially when he got started. And I think he's been great for us this season. I think he probably could have played more games. I think, obviously, Tom, because he's a young player, I refuse to call him Tom. I call him Tim, just to be awkward. Just tell him I don't know his name.
He's lucky you call him Tim.
Because apparently, when he came in, I was like, all right, Tim. Right, and he looked at me and didn't say, and I was testing to see if he'd correct me, but he didn't.
He didn't. I love that.
And he went up to Jack and he's like, Jack, Haskell keeps calling me Tim. he does know my name's Tom. And Jack tried to have a word with him. He's like, listen, Jack, I know his name's Tom, but I'm going to call him Tim. So everyone now calls him Tim. Rugby chat. And
bloody lads on
tour. Yeah, and I think he's great as well. I think he's got a big future. Obviously, injury-wise, listen, for me, injury's always a disappointing time. I know he'll be, he 100% would have gone and got capped on the tour, and he fully deserved it. But if that's not going to happen now, he just needs to see an opportunity to come back better. Really focus on looking after his body, getting in the best possible shape, and then worrying about kind of coming back and playing second. Because if you try to focus too much on playing and what you're going to do and if you're going to get into England and everything else, don't worry about that. Just worry about what you can control, which is what you put in your body, how you train, how you recover, get yourself in the best possible shape, and then hit the ground running.
Just read your book then, yeah?
Perfect fit. I'll get him a copy. Yeah.
Book, or is that I thought it was a pamphlet. There's one over there by the bar, mate.
Brilliant.
The guy who looks like Die Young had Die not ever been to the gym or worked out. Okay.
Hi, guys, I'm Rob. Do you think Sean Edwards is the right pick for the defence coaching role?
What, for England?
Yes.
So Matt Dawson does, doesn't he? Matt Dawson has tipped him to be the guy. What do you think, Has?
Well, I mean, I was lucky enough to work with Sean, and he's undoubtedly an incredible coach. A man so passionate about kind of everything that it his kind of his passion, aggression just overflows, and you'd want to just absolutely batter people when he kind of speaks, and he's a great motivator. I think he'd be great. I'm obviously very disappointed that kind of Paul Gustard's going. I think he's been
strange though, isn't it?
Yeah,
well, very strange. The timing of this.
Yeah, I think you made a very good point earlier when we were talking about it. Going, if you go to a World Cup, it's very good to. It's very hard to get a job after. If you win it, then it's great. But if anything less than winning, what's the situation? So obviously, a once in a lifetime opportunity to coach Harlequins, to be director of rugby came up, and I think he made the decision to do that. And I'm disappointed because Eddie's been undoubtedly the genius behind England's resurgence and winning those bits and pieces. But what people forget is that he's got two or three very incredible coaches underneath him. Bortha's, is turned into a very, very good coach. He was a great sort of analytical player, but his now, his ability to coach, and he on the Lions tour, he was brilliant for the kind of the midweek guys. And Paul Gustard kind of brings the knowledge, the passion, that his presentations are kind of legendary, and he's a very good guy, full stop. And I think that they all work very well together. And I think that would be just very disappointing that England are losing someone as quality as him, really.
Yeah, Sean is brilliant for Wales. What he's done with the Cardiff Blues as well. He's done a lot of defence coaching with him. He is brilliant, just the way he gets his point across, the way he motivates players. It would be a huge loss to Wales if he did go.
One question from me, Shanks. Are you... still hoping to get the 8:40 train, mate, because at the moment you're going to miss it. If you want to leave, you can. One train gets him home at 10, the next one gets him home at 1. And the one that gets him home at 10 leaves. It leaves in 14
okay.
minutes.
It's 2 minutes delayed.
What are you going to do, our kid?
Right. We've got any more questions?
Okay. You can't sacrifice work for this, mate, if you give a train journey home. Guys, just so you know, I will stay as long as it takes tonight, okay?
I won't. Yeah. But
I've had a lot of shoulder surgery, so I can't throw a ball very far. But I could hit my hotel with a cricket ball from here, so I am more than happy to stay. Like T-Rex throw. Yeah, go for it, Clark Kent.
Hi, name's Chris.
Is that Chris Robshaw?
That is Chris Robshaw.
It is Chris Robshaw.
Is that hair real or is that Lego?
You interviewed me for a job at Bath a couple of years ago, so...
Oh, did you get it?
No. Soz.
I tell you who got it. Was my mate Baz got it. He spells his name Baz. Oh, he's my mate now. I didn't know him then. He spells his name Baz with two Zs. Like, what vermin does that? He's a... Baz. It's pathetic. But he only got the job because his uncle, Frank, is the travel editor for the Mail on Sunday, which is the most read travel supplement in the UK. And I knew that if I gave Baz the job, I'd have an in and I'd get some free holidays. And it worked. Sure. By the way, I didn't know that at the time, but it did work out that way. Are you the guy that we interviewed for that job, by the way, who, when I used to have a proper job, I used to interview people and decide who got jobs and who didn't?
I can't believe they let you used to do that.
Mate, I was the gaffer, mate.
Well, I know. How were you? I remember that.
It's people. No, but were you the guy? The question to you before you start: are you the guy who? I remember one of the interviewees for that didn't get it because I said, right, they had loads of official questions. And it's like, right, get those done. They're dull. You've got a weekend off. You can do whatever you want. You can go wherever you want. Money's not a problem. Anything you want the weekend. And you said, I'll tell you what, I'd go for a run. I'd work out, and I'd probably give my house or my flat a proper deep clean.
No,
was that you?
I said it was. You're out, mate. Trying to be professional, but it wasn't me. So
okay. Anyway, yeah, fine. Hey,
question.
Go for it.
Interesting seeing Cipriani back in the squad for the summer tour. Personally, I think he's there on form. I think he's done a fantastic, and I want him to see there at the World Cup. Do you think that Eddie's given him an olive branch this summer, just that he stays in England next summer, so that if there's an injury crisis at 10, if he needs cover, Sips is going to be there and he can pick him for him?
Well, it's a very ruthless way to look at things.
Actually, listen,
anything's possible. I think Danny's been incredible for Wasps in his second stint. I think that he attacks sort of very uniquely in terms of other tens. Obviously other ten. It's not about who's better. It's about what you want, how you want to play, what how he works in an environment. But I think he's been excellent. I think, listen, there's always reasons behind everything. But I think Danny's there on merit. I think that the idea of someone like Eddie Jones is to always see the bigger picture, always be one step ahead. So he knows what he's going on. He knows. What his kind of team he wants to put in, what he's going to be involved in. And I think Danny's going to go to South Africa and really take the opportunity and really whether he gets an opportunity to play or not, I think it'd be great to have him in the mix. I think he deserves to be there. And a lot of people, misunderstand Danny. He absolutely loves, rugby. He works so hard on his game and he wants to, he wants to play for England more than anything else. And I think sometimes... he's been disappointed, on a number of occasions not getting in, and I think sometimes unfairly. He might have an image or a persona, and it worries him. But trust me, he's very disappointed every time he doesn't. So to see his face when he actually got the nod was something to behold, and for him to play like he's been playing. I just hope he gets an opportunity. I hope he enjoys it, and I hope everyone starts to see what a good player and good person he is.
From the outside, he plays a certain way, doesn't he? But he needs others around him to work off. And I think that combination with Farrell. With him possibly at 10 and Farrell at 12, will work for England.
See, something that's worked so well for Wasps is Cipriani and almost whomever's in the midfield. So 13 has been really important to you, whether it's Lovabalavu or whether it's De Jong, been really, really important for you guys. But also, Willie LaRue's been really important. So Sips seems to create space. He seems to deliver the right pass late very often. Lovely attacking player. I think the best attacking player in England in any position. But I do wonder if he will have the same success with England. I really hope he does. Cause I've loved watching him play. Really pumped, really chuffed he's got picked. Because I think he's a lovely man as well and all that stuff. But he's a brilliant player. But I quite like the idea of Daly. There's chat today from Brendan Gallagher on social media, one of the sports writers, one of the great sports writers. And he said that Cipriani is listed as a fullback for the England Barbars game on Sunday. And what's the point? He's been fly half all season. And I agree with that. But I quite like the idea of Cipriani working with Farrell, working with, say, a Joseph or a Slade at 13, and then working with someone like a Daly at fullback hitting the line, because Willie LaRue's really profited from Cipriani, but a lot of the time Cipriani's delivered really good ball, but Willie LaRue's just such an all-round wonderful player that you feel like England need a great attacking fullback to get the most out of Cipriani. Now, is it worth picking someone just at fullback just to suit Cipriani at 10? I would argue yes, because I think he is the best attacking fly half in England when he's playing well. So I would pick the tools to try and get the best out of him. So I think fullback selection, weirdly, I think it's one of those things that could really affect how Danny Cipriani looks in an England shirt.
I'm also surprised that you know, Danny hasn't had more opportunity, because I don't know if you remember in the, before the 2015 World Cup, which went well, was a warm-up game against France away, and Danny came off the bench and basically single-handedly got us back in the game. And I thought in those 15 minutes he played, 20 minutes he played, he kind of showed why he what he can do. And I was surprised that that I didn't play him into the actual World Cup squad then. I'm not sure he would have necessarily got any game time, but just that one performance, that kind of sticks in my mind for someone that he'd been out for a while, got that opportunity. We were getting absolutely drilled by France, you know, because we trained all the way through. So we'd done like fitness 2 days before the game.
Knackered,
so everyone was,
yeah. Yeah,
everyone was shattered. And they'd made a point of that, but a lot of fans, a lot of media don't know that and don't care. So everyone's just getting, they all look tired. They look rubbish.
Stuck the knife in, yeah.
Yeah, of course you did. In between tweeting about how good Don Armand is, by the way, will you stop going on about that? He's an incredible player. Just give it a rest.
When
have you ever tweeted about me?
Luke Cowan-Dickie as well.
Yeah. You literally get these people, like every little sound bites, everything.
Pask, if I'm picking an England squad,
yeah.
Okay, I put you in it. And I put you in it for
team manager.
Mainly for playing reasons. Yeah. You're fucking kit man, mate.
Yeah.
I put you in it for rugby reasons and I put you in it for personality reasons. I do not see, and you can't be objective because you're in the same position, I do not see how an England coach watches every Premiership game, because I know Eddie Jones' work ethic is unquestioned. I do not see how you watch and do not put him in. It's for me, it's as crazy as it would be to leave out a Mako Vunipola or leave out a Jack Noel fully fit. I just cannot believe he's not in, because okay. I think he's brilliant.
And I actually love... I'd never played with Don. I didn't really know him until he came on that game against Ireland. I met him in the week. What a top guy.
Great guy.
And also, lovely guy. Unbelievable collection of haircuts he's had in his time.
Yeah, he's got the blade and the fin.
Yeah, and I love playing with him. I think he put me through a couple of holes in the game, not anywhere else.
Oh no!
Yeah, yeah. I just really liked him.
His kid's got a fin as well.
Yeah,
he's got, like, the
mohawk. But I just
fin,
think it's one of those things. I'm never a position hater. I'm always one of these guys that takes people on face value, and yeah. I'd obviously know all about how good he was. I obviously follow you on Twitter, so every 5 minutes you're banging the drum.
Yeah.
And it was actually great to meet him, see that he's a very good player, ultimately see that he was a top guy, and he had a bit of chat, and I love that.
Just Dan Cipriani, his first international cap was 2008 against Wales. He came off the bench, and I tackled him. I think I basically put him off international rugby. Right, we'll have one more question.
The human lightsaber got him, did it?
Okay. Whoa, there's a ghost in the room.
The ultimate decoy, moth to a flame.
Richard,
hi. Richard,
are you more looking forward to or apprehensive about playing against Wasps potentially next season? And given the opportunity, how hard are you going to cut down Brad Shields?
Two questions. You're taking the piss, okay?
That'd be interesting. I hadn't actually thought of it yet. I was kind of... I'm more interested about my first day at Saints or my first time back in pre-season, because...
Hi, everyone, I'm James.
That's what I mean.
You know everyone knows you, but you can't assume everyone knows you. You've got to go, hi, I'm Ask.
Yeah, yeah.
And you can't say your nickname. Or go in and just say, hi, I'm Ace.
You know, Ace. That's what I want, the Duke.
The Duke.
I want a really good nickname. Right? I've never had a decent nickname, or any nicknames I've had, you can't say. Hey, it's either
Razor.
James or
Razor.
Hask.
Yeah. Razor.
Or Blade. People just call me a Hask. I hate that. I hate my full name. It's very formal. And it's normally when someone's bollocking you, it's quite harsh. Haskell.
Welburn.
So I'm like, I want to go in there and go, yeah, lads, call me Duke. Dukey. I'm like, all right, lads. You know what I mean?
Yeah. The operator.
Yeah. All right, lads. All right.
Yeah. Schlong.
Yeah.
Schlong.
Yeah. I'll tell you one story that this is last thing, is that I was driving out of Penny Hill Park, right, with my missus next to me, and Sam Burgess drove up next to me as he was coming in. We're going out for the afternoon when we had windows down. All right, Sam. He went, all right, Shagger. Right?
Yeah, I love that.
He went, all right, Shagger. And I literally went like this. Right? And I went, Sam, you've met my girlfriend, have you? Right? Anyway, so he like laughed, didn't say anything about it. And he hadn't seen her. And then she said, why is he calling you Shagger? Why is he calling you Shagger? And I obviously, you know, back in the day, I'd enjoyed my singledom, but I'd never been given that title. And I said, listen, he has never called me that before. Right? He's never called me a Shagger. He's just something the lads would call each other. You know, we like Joe, like Top Shagger, whatever it might be. He's never done that. And you could see her not really believing it. Mind's whirring, right? She's got MI6 on, you know, satellite surveillance. Yeah. Phone's been disintegrated. And so anyway, thought nothing more about it. Later that week, walk in, Rob Webber. All right, Shagger. Right? Chloe's next to him, like that. She goes, oh, Shagger is it again? So I, honestly, I literally took them both to one side. I went, Webs, why are you calling me that? And he goes, I don't know. I heard you say it. Someone went, stop calling me Shaggy when my missus is around. I'm not doing anything. I'm getting all the heat.
Not a bad nickname, though, because it's the worst nicknames on that.
Do you remember Ben Johnston?
If it's
Johnston?
About me, no, I don't.
No, you're not okay. You. Ben Johnston, the centre we had at Sarries years ago, Jono, and he played for England a couple of times, but he had this new girlfriend, and we were like 23 at the time, 21, 22 we were, and he had a new girlfriend, and we were like, her name was Tina. I think they're married now, kids, which is very, very lovely. And they had a Greek wedding. She's Greek, and they had a proper Greek wedding. And then I remember at the wedding, this is not the story, but I remember at the wedding, we all went and we all got pissed beforehand. Even Richard Hill like got pissed, and we all walked into the church pissed in North London, wherever it was. And the Greek Orthodox priest was there. I don't know, I'm probably saying it probably wasn't a priest, it's most whatever he
Come
was.
Come on, mate.
Most German. And he goes, and it said, Tina so-and-so, Opelopoulos, whatever it was. sorry.
Shit, yeah, I've done it.
You've done it.
Yeah.
Oh, no, I've done it.
One false move, and you're suddenly Jim Davison. Have you done it now? You've done it.
That's all right, because I've got Greek family, so I can do that. So anyway, and it was like, do you promise and swear on the holy whatever it is to take care of your husband? and we just folded at the back of the thing. There's all of us, Chris Chesley and us, sort of at the back, and Hilly. We're all screaming at the back. We're like trying our best. We're falling over, sweating, laughing. Anyway, we used to say, Jono, what's your new girlfriend like? He used to go, she's 27, lawyer. We're like, no, ask you, is she nice? Like, what's she like? 27. Lawyer. You're like, mate. Yeah, so what are our hobbies? 27. Lawyer. You're like, all right, well done, mate. You married someone who's got good future earning potential. Anyway, but sitting behind her, the first time she came to a game, it was a second team game, she came back from injury, and we just all sat behind his new girlfriend, and we're like, go on, Shagger! Go on, Driller! Go on, Naylor! Go on, Top Shagger! Go on, Snugger! And she absolutely hated it. He wasn't, by the way, but...
Yeah. Well, we do like to end our podcast on a high. I think that's a pretty decent end. But thank you so much for coming along to the live Fuller's Guinness podcast. Please put your hands together for James Haskell.
Well done, Hask.
Hang on. He's ended that. He's cut me off.
You can still make the train, Tomboy.
I do have to shoot, but David Flamman is going to do 10, 15 minutes of a little bit of stand-up
later on today.
But seriously, thank you for coming. Thank you for pushing tickets. I'll try and get the podcast up tonight. So if you have asked a question, you'd be quite famous by the morning. enjoy. Please ring responsibly.
Cheers, guys. Thank you.